Meet Minnie Wabanimki.
I do not ask people to stop what they're doing and smile. I usually work around the person that I'm photographing.
She is a photographer and a member of the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. And for decades, she has used her photography to record Native culture.
What I try to do is get a meaningful photograph, something that will tell you something about that person or that person's work, so that you can look at that photo and actually feel something emotionally.
We'll spend some time with her this week on the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. That story from our series Fresh Coast Creatives a little later in this episode, plus citizen science on the streets of downtown Traverse City. But first, a little help from our friends. For years now, our friends at the Traverse City Record Eagle have been publishing stories on the way Michigan protects vulnerable adults. The series, called Unguarded, looks at the flaws in the state's guardian and conservator programs. It found that the system meant to protect vulnerable adults can often do exactly the opposite. And it looks at how attempts to fix the system have failed over the last 30 years. Record Eagle senior reporter Marty Link is leading the series, and she dropped by our studios this week to tell IPR's Tyler Thompson about the latest installment, which introduces us to someone named Lee Storch.
Lee Storch is somebody that I've been communicating with off and on, I would say, for more than a year. I profiled one of her former clients, and this story really is just a day in the life of someone who mostly takes on cases of indigent clients, meaning that they don't have a trust fund, they don't have unlimited money for long-term care, and Lee steps in to provide them with some assistance.
Interesting. You know, how does her story compare to other reporting the Record Eagle has done on guardianship?
Most of the other reporting we've done has been from the perspective of the ward. Now, that's kind of a loaded word. Many people don't like that word. Lee calls her people clients. I prefer that word also. Gives the person a little more agency. But most of our reporting has been from the perspective of someone who needs a guardian or who has a guardian, who's been appointed a guardian. In this case, it's really from Lee's perspective and what it's like to be a guardian.
Yeah, you know, these stories have been appearing in the paper since 2022. They've won myriad awards, and I feel like sometimes it can feel like, well, I think we've done our job, but that's not always the case in journalism. What's kept you following this story?
Yeah, so just this morning before I came to talk with you, I looked up our previous reporting, and we've done about 20 stories.
Wow.
The first one published December 1st, 2019, and it was under the headline, "You Can Lose All Your Rights." And so that is so important. I feel almost duty-bound to continue telling these stories. And most of my reporting has been in northern Michigan, although we have looked at about a dozen counties. But I do imagine if I'm finding these stories and I'm just one person, imagine what's happening around the state and around the nation.
Yeah. We mentioned there have been years of attempts in Lansing to reform Michigan's guardianship and conservator system. Do you think this reporting is helping to bring about any change?
I certainly hope so. I do know in October, the State House passed a package of legislation, and I hope our reporting has been instrumental in not just educating our general readers, but also our elected officials.
So is something different now that might make change stick?
Well, our reporting has shown that officials have been trying to reform the system since at least 1996. It has gone through the Supreme Court. It's gone through the legislature. Everybody has looked at this, but so far there hasn't been real substantive change. However, Attorney General Dana Nessel started an elder abuse task force that has representatives from about 50 different organizations. Mm. And some of the legislation that task force either supported or proposed. So that's a pretty big wave of support behind it. Also, The fact that the House has passed their legislative package, I think, is important. So fingers crossed that something actually happens this time.
Wonderful. You know, we're going to hear this story on Sunday, or read it, I should say. I'm so used to saying hear this story on our end. But what else do you want the community to know about this series, the story, and what's happening on the legislative end?
I think one thing that people can do, and this is not a popular topic, nobody wants to think about their own mortality, but I think what people can do is have an estate plan, make a will, decide who you want to be your guardian if you ever need a guardian. And if people did that, some of these cases could be headed off at the pass. Some of these cases might never get to a probate court argument. So that would be my sort of my first piece of advice. I also wanted to just list, there is a 24-hour hotline. If you're aware of any kind of elder abuse and you want to report it, it's 855-444-3911, and that's statewide.
Wonderful. And for folks listening, we'll share those resources at iprnews.org with this web publication. Marty Link is the senior reporter for the Traverse City Record Eagle and works on the paper's Unguarded series, which examines the flaws in Michigan's systems of protecting vulnerable adults. Her latest story will be available in Sunday's edition of the Record Eagle and online at record-eagle.com. Marty, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Tyler, and thanks for reading the paper.
IPR's Tyler Thompson talking with Record Eagle reporter Marty Link. When we return, a new photography exhibition offers a view into a form of embroidery practiced for centuries here in northern Michigan.
It's about porcupine art, I guess you could say. You have a piece of birch bark and it has a design on it, and one quill at a time is woven into that birch bark.
We'll be right back.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts. Only from NPR.
Our lives are filled with music. In movies, streaming shows, and advertisements. But have you ever had the chance to meet the musicians that make the content in person? I'm Matthew Schlomer, Artistic Director for IPR's Soundgarden Project, and it is our goal that everyone in Northern Michigan will get to hang out with some of our incredible musicians this summer. Thanks to Interlochen Public Radio, Golden Fowler Home Furnishings, Michigan Arts and Culture Council, and the National Endowment for the Arts, the Soundgarden Project is back for its fourth season of planting music in unexpected places, and we have some new surprises in store for you. So watch for Soundgarden musicians on your pontoon boat, at your grocery store, maybe even your dentist's office. We'll pop up anywhere and share a free sampling of live music by world-class musicians. Find out more at soundgardenproject.org.
Welcome back to the Up North Lowdown. I'm Ed Ronco. With Memorial Day behind us, we are getting our first arrivals of summertime visitors. Businesses are seeing more customers, the sidewalks feel more alive, and people seem to be glad to be up north for a few days. While these visitors are ambling through downtown Traverse City, local officials are hoping that they will take 3 minutes or so to become citizen scientists and help count pollinators. IPR climate reporter Izzy Ross explains.
Planters along Traverse City's Front Street have small signs with a QR code. For a few years now, people have been able to fill out an online survey listing the number of insects they see visiting the planters. Nate Walton is an educator with Michigan State University Extension, based in Leelanau County. He says the project is helping to establish a local database for pollinators such as bees and butterflies.
One of the things that I get more excited about, honestly, is the fact that humans are doing this, that they're taking time out of their vacations usually, or maybe their work day, and at least spending 3 minutes to look at flowers and look at insects visiting those flowers.
The city's Downtown Development Authority works with the Northwest Michigan Master Gardeners Association and MSU on the planters.
Izzy Ross with that quick explanation. Her reporting comes to us through a partnership with Grist. Right now, the planters contain mostly non-native plants, but organizers say they are aiming to transition to more native species in the coming years. MSU has started a similar project in Frankfurt and hopes to expand to other towns as well. So if you want to give this a whirl, go to downtown Traverse City, look for the signs in the planter boxes. I suppose you could also try it in Frankfurt as well.
Working together is what keeps us alive. We got jobs to do, so excuse us please. We're busy, 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 busy bees. We fly to the fields in the early morning hours to get pollen and nectar from out of the flowers. We'll make honey from the nectar that we found. We'll take some other pollen and spread it around, which will pollinate the flowers and make more grow. Then with pollen and nectar to the hive we'll go. We're busy, busy bees, busy, 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 busy bees.
Okay, time for another installment of our series, Fresh Coast Creatives. It's a good one. You ready? Here goes.
This is Fresh Coast Creatives from IPR, a series about artists and inspiration in Northern Michigan. Each episode, we go into the studio or creative space of local artists and talk about what makes them tick. I'm Leslie Hamp. This week, I met Minnie Wabanimke, a lifelong photographer, at her home in Peshawbetown, just north of Sutton's Bay. She's a member of the Grand Traverse Band of Odawa and Chippewa Indians. We sat at her kitchen table to chat about an upcoming exhibit where 100 of her photos and videos will be on display. The show will be called It's More Than a Quill Box.
It's about porcupine art, I guess you could say. You have a piece of birch bark, and it has a design on it, and one quill at a time is woven into that birch bark to make a design and a pattern that's pleasing to the eye, that tells you something, that's colorful, that's natural, and it's woven on the edges with sweetgrass, and it's just phenomenal.
She tells me that quill work dates back hundreds of years as the oldest form of embroidery used by Native Americans in this region. This quill work often adorns quill boxes, which were used to store food items or special collections or as decorative pieces. But now, it's a dying art, and there's a great push to teach younger generations. Minnie has been preserving Native American culture in her photographs for decades. In her upcoming exhibit, her photography focuses on the quill workers who live in the Great Lakes region, including Canada.
I do not ask people to stop what they're doing and smile. I usually work around the person that I'm photographing.
Minnie shares an image of Yvonne Walker Kijik, a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa in the Petoskey area. Yvonne has been making quill boxes since she was a teenager. Minnie says Yvonne's quill boxes are artistically perfect. She describes one that stood out to her.
It must be 12 to 15 inches wide and half as tall, and it shows the life cycle of a Native woman, and it's all natural colors. There are no dyes used in her quill box.
Yvonne has taught four of her children how to create quillwork art.
Their family is very prolific, and they all do quillwork, and it supplements their income.
Minnie shows me a photo of Yvonne's family at Burt Lake, 30 miles south of the Mackinac Bridge. This is where they go every spring to pick sweetgrass for their artwork before the heat of the summer. It's an environmental portrait. They are surrounded by lush green sweetgrass.
It is Yvonne, it's her sister, her son, and her daughter, and two children in that family. Everyone has sweetgrass in their hands, and that is what they use on the edging of the quill boxes.
She tells me more about the art of photographing quill workers.
What I try to do is get a meaningful photograph, something that will tell you something about that person or that person's work, so that you can look at that photo and actually feel something emotionally. And I like to show where that piece came from, where that piece lived, where that person lived, because in Wequimacon, Canada, it's so different from here.
There's a lot left to do before the exhibit opens at the Zeebowing Center of Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways in Mount Pleasant this fall. But Minnie says a team of five Native elders, an interpreter, photographer, and the MSU staff are on track.
The Quillwork exhibit is going to be bilingual, which will be the first in Anishinaabemowin, which is our language, and also English. There will be videos. There'll be 80 to 100 quill boxes. There's going to be photographs. There's going to be a tribute to the elders who have passed on who did quill work, the teachers. And we're hoping that we get enough people to come and see the exhibit that they will have an appreciation for this lost, dying art that is so amazing.
After a morning with Minnie, I can't wait to see the exhibit. I admire her artistry and environmental portraits, and I'm intrigued to learn more about quill workers and their art. To see Minnie's images of quill workers and their art, visit interlakenpublicradio.org. For Interlaken Public Radio, I'm Leslie Hamp.
Support for Fresh Coast Creatives comes from the Northwest Michigan Arts and Culture Network through an award from the Michigan Arts and Culture Council, connecting arts, culture, and our creative communities.
You can find more episodes of Fresh Coast Creatives on our website, iprnews.org. Look under Red Pine Radio, which is IPR's community workshop for audio storytelling. Let's look at some of the other Michigan headlines this week. The state of Michigan is asking for blood and urine samples to test people's exposure to certain chemicals. The Michigan Chemical Exposure Monitoring Project, or MyChem for short, is the first statewide effort to get data on levels of things like lead, mercury, and PFAS in people's bodies. The project is measuring nearly 200 chemicals. Now, people can absorb those things in a variety of ways, eating and drinking, using certain products, and exposure at work or in the environment. Volunteers in the study get to keep their results and receive a gift card for their trouble. A program designed to bring more dental assistance to tribal communities in the Upper Peninsula was highlighted by the Michigan Dental Association in May. The partnership between Northwestern Michigan College and Bay Mills Community College is only a year old, but it was praised by the MDA for targeting non-traditional students. It aims to train more people in the field and make up for severe staff shortages, especially in tribal communities. A second farm worker in Michigan has tested positive for bird flu. This is the second human case in Michigan, only the third in the country, but the state's chief medical officer, Dr. Natasha Bagdasarian, says the risk to the public remains low. Farms, meanwhile, have been asked to implement new safety measures to help prevent the spread of the illness among livestock. The disease, in addition to showing up in birds, per its name, has also appeared in cattle. Half of Michigan renters paid more than 30% of their income on housing in 2022. The federal government calls that a, quote, overburden, which makes it hard for people to pay other bills. More than a quarter of renters paid more than half of their income on housing. The University of Michigan report says wages are not keeping up with housing costs. It also found a gap in who owns homes. Nearly 80% of white households were homeowners. Just 45% of black households could say the same thing. That's it for the lowdown this week. We had help from Tyler Thompson, Izzy Ross, Leslie Hamp, Peter Payette, and Marty Link at the Traverse City Record Eagle. Our music comes from Blue Dot Sessions. Our producer is Max Copeland. I'm Ed Ronco. We usually end our episodes by playing a pleasant sound for you to hear, and this week will be no exception. But our sonic send-off this time is also an actual send-off. Our colleague at Classical IPR, Keith Brown, is moving on to new opportunities. Keith has, of course, worked on the radio for years, and he's been building up work as a voice actor. So, Keith, we wish you well in this new endeavor. We are looking forward to hearing your gameplay show run in repeats until the end of the year, and we just hope for the very best for you. So, for the rest of you, let's depart this week with the dulcet tones of Keith Brown.
Thanks for listening to the Up North Lowdown. Have a great week.
Farewell, Keith. Good luck.
From Pac-Man's dots to Mario's coins to Sonic's rings, collecting has always been a part of video games. This week, I'll share with you a few of the amazing scores I've collected throughout this adventure that haven't yet had a chance to shine, from Assassin's Creed, The Witcher, Genshin Impact, and lots more. I'm Keith Brown. Join me for a cornucopia of musical collectibles, this time on Gameplay.
You can stream full episodes of Gameplay on demand and view playlists at gameplayshow.org.